And now it's time for Inside Voices with Kevin Causey-Thomas, a local discussion focused on systemic racism, injustice, and hate in our country. Although we may not always agree, the aim of Inside Voices is to confront these truths together by sharing the voices of those facing these struggles and to find a path to making things better. We invite you to listen to this ongoing conversation. And now, here's Kevin.
And welcome, Black women, men, allies in the struggle, people of all races, colors, and nationalities. Thank you for checking in again. This is Kevin Causey-Thomas, and you are listening to another episode of Inside Voices right here on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com. And I am joined right out the gate. I want to go ahead and introduce him because he's in the building again.
Yeah.
Poet, professor. Multi-hyphenated creative. That's Kai brought that to me, so we use that now. Multi-hyphenated creative.
I like it.
For the people that got multiple things going on. Dasan Ahanu,
yes,
back in the building. Welcome back, Dasan.
Man, it's a pleasure to be here, Causey, man. I'm glad to be able to be back in conversation with you again, man.
Yeah, glad to have you back. And for those of y'all that are familiar with Dasan, he was on the very first episode, and he will be a recurring voice, someone you will continue to hear here on Inside Voices. Ongoing, right on. So we continue in this conversation, Dasan, and the very first episode we talked about, do Black Lives Matter? Mm-hmm. And that was back, several weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I would love to be able to talk to you and say that no one has died or there hasn't been any police involved shootings or that there's been some revelation of peace that has happened from since now and back then when we first spoke. But since then, you know, we've just seen more of the same, right? And, Rashard Brooks's, death in Atlanta, Georgia, in a parking lot after being pulled over and having a 20 to 30 minute conversation with police, and he ends up dead.
Yeah.
And then out in Kenosha, James Blake ends up shot 7 times in his back, as we all watched that on television.
Yeah.
The response that has proceeded from the people, cities have ended up on fire, a lot of pain, a lot of frustration from local community. And I want to start with that. Like, where are we now compared to where we were when this first gained momentum and George Floyd's death and Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor, which is still ongoing? Where are we now?
Yeah, man. Well, to be completely honest, man, we all over the place. Yeah. I think the difference now is that wherever we are, it's all kind of fueled by what's going on. There's like, it's like right over everybody's shoulder in their thinking, regardless. You know, there was a period of time where I feel like it wasn't homogenous. We weren't all on the same page, but there was like, we felt a collective kind of sympathy with each other because of just everything that was happening. I think now we're at the place where folks are able to kind of sit back and think and breathe a little bit more, and the dissonance is coming in terms of what people think is the direction we should move. And so now that's why I say we're all over the place, because there are a variety of different perspectives, there are a variety of different approaches. There's so much more to work with because we saw all these responses from places, including corporate entities. And it's like, so what does that mean? How do we hold them accountable?
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Man. Yeah, there's lots of money being funneled, lots of new initiatives. Everybody was looking to provide resources for Black artists, for Black communities, for Black organizations. There's just so much happening. And it's everybody's trying to figure out what that means. It gets tense at times. Yeah. But also what we're seeing is we're continuing to see an engagement from folks, especially folks that we criticized for being detached before. It's funny because I think, I don't know what artist said this, but they were talking about being in a position to say something.
Right.
And talking about that growth in their career to be at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing who feels comfortable.
Right.
Enough.
Right on, because it's been a myriad of responses. And I think you highlighted right? You know, that all black people don't think the same. I know that I think that, you know, a lot of people will think that there's this uniform response from the black community. Mm-hmm. And you have some Malcolms and you have some Martins. Mm-hmm. And then you have some Dick Gregory's and some Stokely Carmichael's. And you got some Carlton Banks's out there, too. So it just depends on, like, you know, your background and your experience. But I think that you've highlighted that all of us are not uniform even on how we think about Black Lives Mattering, right? And there's been some splintering of, how can I say, messaging at this point, right? That I think that 9 out of 10 people, just from my opinion, when they first got on board with Black Lives Matter, were here for justice. Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd. It was kind of like point blank, A to Z, we're here for the justice. And those that are truly invested in Black Lives Matter then introduced the narrative of, well, we need to defund the police as well, right? And then that took to the street where you see peaceful protests. Then at night, it gets kind of wild and violent and it's ongoing. How is the splintering of this message, like, how do you interpret that? Like, how you feeling about that? Because there's like several messages I feel like going on at once. Like, how do we stay focused?
Well, I think part of it is a realization that there's like a scarcity mindset that exists, and unfortunately, it's like covers a lot of things that, you know, black folks have been involved in, whether it's community or business or what have you, and other folks of color, that when you don't have, when you're used to not having, that there's like a real desperation for when there's a moment and what should be done with the moment.
We gotta cram it all in.
Right. And or either there's a tug of war over who gets to move at that moment. And I think that's where we are. When the reality is all of the kinds of things that people are pointing out are all problems that need to be addressed. They're just all being laid out one after the other because everybody has a different opinion about which one, like the chicken and egg, like which one is the appropriate action for the moment. But I don't think we've ever had the opportunity to feel like that we could work on a bunch of things at one time. So then it becomes a tug of war. And I've seen some of those conversations where the other thing that happens is that when that happens, instead of just putting forth what I think is the moment, what the response should be, I have to take some light or discredit this other, or I have to criticize this other thing. And that's the part I don't like, because there's energy to be devoted, and there's skill sets that are best suited depending on the strategy.
Right.
But we're pulling people when we start arguing over what should happen.
Right.
When, you know, because we want all the people on our side, when actually part of them probably would be better served working on something else. If we want to be effective, it shouldn't be about numbers right now, and it shouldn't be about, like, you know what I'm saying? It shouldn't be like boosted, like, it shouldn't be about affirmation of anybody's, you know, idea about what's right. It should be like, how do we appropriately maneuver? So when we look to any movements that have been successful, when we start to invoke our elders and those who came before us, it was always a strategy about where to apply people.
Right.
And I think that's what ends up getting missing when we get to these moments. And part of that is just, we've been socialized with a mindset that you don't have the luxury of having a multi-pronged strategy.
Right.
Which one of y'all gonna get the lead or move at this moment? Y'all figure it out. And then watch us, you know, struggle through that.
Trying to hash 400 years of problems and issues and while I have your attention, right? And I don't know how long I have it.
Yep.
So let me cram this all in while the squeaky wheel is getting some oil.
Yep.
Let's address 400 years of issues right now before you turn the channel and back off,
you
turn the volume back down. And that's tough, because you highlighted, you know, a couple of things that, you know, the organization of this, even when Black Lives Matter was first introduced to me, it was introduced to me as a hashtag, a sentiment, a motivation, you know, and that there's an organization that's connected to it that has been painted as somewhat terrorist by our government and people that, that don't wish to see any of this change happen have painted this as terrorists. I've even seen where Premier League in England, they're taking the Black Lives Matter patches off their uniforms, and they're going to put in racism, a different patch. But because of this now convolution of, and don't get me wrong, I know that media and anyone that promotes white supremacy has no interest in seeing Black Lives Matter become the topic of the moment, right? And so we have, I feel like, this combating energy going on where it's like, turn that down. Like, all right, enough of that. It's mm-hmm. like almost like, okay, we've heard you out, like type of energy that I see permeating the media a little bit, and people continuing to say, nah, this conversation's not done yet, mm-hmm. right? And having to continue to find ways to say, this isn't just something of, because of George Floyd, it didn't end there. This has been ongoing and continues to go on. And it's tough, right? Because I see different Black Lives Matter leaders in different cities carrying it differently. Mm-hmm. And then we don't want to get caught up in this, like what we call oppression Olympics, right? Where it's like, yep. My problems, I got more problems than you got. Mm-hmm. And then so like, then we're battling over who, you know, well, we need justice. Well, we need to defund the police. Well, what about education? Well, what about that? And it's so much. And all of it is valid.
Yeah.
All of it's important. But it's just like everybody trying to cram through this one door of issues at once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's tough because I'm hoping that we're paying attention to things that we think we know, but we don't. Because one of the things with BLM is that Black Lives Matter as a rallying cry is still very valid. Mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter as a mantra for how you organize and build solidarity in a community still matters. But there's a lot of folks distancing themselves away because there's an organization that exists. Like, we don't understand nonprofits,
right,
and the whole nature of that, and how that has historically operated.
And we've talked about, we had Barbara Jesse talking on that Black red-led nonprofits get less money, less funding, less attention, and even are demonized in this case, with the least common denominator is mattering, and somehow Black Lives Mattering is terrorist.
Yeah. And so when they go and they do research about the Black Lives Matter organization, then folks are like, we have questions. And it's like, I hear you, mm-hmm. but that's a separate issue, because the existence of that organization is not the driving force for how Black Lives Matter moves on the ground. And the founders of the movement before that organization existed are still out actively out here organizing and are on the ground being brought into to talk about that mantra, that process to help people organize in their communities around this idea of Black Lives Matter. But those two things end up, right. One gets discredited because right. The existence of this thing, when me and you could listen to the streets and they could be like, you know, hey, you know, I don't know, Blue Skies Matter.
Right.
And either one of us could go and start a nonprofit Blue Skies Matter and send some money out into the community behind it. We didn't start the mantra. We didn't organize it. We're just the people who realized what the value of having a nonprofit behind it was. And so we just got to, but once again, we have a different view of what all that looks like because of the way that we've accessed and used nonprofits, as opposed to the way other folks have accessed and used nonprofits. We do it because we want to do a service to the community, and we want a way to be able to get some funding and some support. Other folks understand it is a different type of business.
Right. If you can make money running a nonprofit.
And so this, we get into this when we've had this in other moments of struggle, Katrina, like there's been these moments where we've had this involvement and, you know, and gotten caught up in that. So there's just so much to sift through, man, in this. Yeah. And we just got to trust the folks around us. Mm-hmm. Last point I want to make on this thing is that we just got to trust the folks around us from these backgrounds, that when they tell us, hey, I understand what you're saying and I understand what you're looking at, but let me help you understand what you're seeing. Right. Let's not argue with them. Let's listen to them and trust them and use that insight to help sift through this. And while I admire all the activity, what I don't like is that there's this also this kind of thing where the folks who have been working are fighting to have their voices heard.
Yeah.
As people are paying attention to things they have been in the field working on.
Yes.
And I just wish that wouldn't happen.
Yes. It's, you know, I see that going on. People that have been in the field this whole time and some people that are brand new to the game, no less important, you know, a new energy. But when, you know, an example different but the same, when Kim Kardashian, for all the good work that she has done to get people out of jail, there have been lawyers and people fighting, you know, Freedom Project stuff going on for a very long time. And so it's the respect that, you know, you want to pay the elders, the OGs, the people that have been doing this work when you are just getting into the game and joining the fight. But those people sometimes get all the money, all the attention because mm-hmm. of the face or who it is or the name associated, while these people grassroots level been doing this work for years, trying to scrape for where the funding's going to come from because they're not on TV and it's less attractive. And then do I give black people money to solve black problems?
Right.
Is the other issue.
Yeah.
Whether you agree with Black Lives Matter as an organization or not doesn't make the hashtag or the sentiment any less valid.
Nope.
And it does not make justice for Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and George Floyd any less important.
Nope.
All right. So we got this on right here, Inside Voices. This is Kevin Kazi Thomas, and we'll be right back. 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com.
You're listening to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas on 97.9 The Hill. We'll be back with more after this. And now, back to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas. Once again, here's Kevin.
And welcome back to Inside Voices. Your host, Kevin Kazi Thomas, and you're listening on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com. And we're joined by one of our recurring guests here and hosts, co-hosts here, Dasana Hanu.
Yeah.
That's right. Speaking, and we're talking about where we are right now with the Black Lives Matter movement, where we are in the current state of the world, and the current events that tie in to the whole awareness of right now. And mm-hmm. One of the things that we want to shed light on and pay homage, give respect, send blessings up for two very important people that we lost in the last week and a half. If y'all are familiar with the actor known as Chadwick Boseman, RIP to Chadwick Boseman, best known for his playing the role of Black Panther in the Marvel series. Played a bunch of iconic African-American roles, Jackie Robinson, James Brown, you know, just a very influential.
Thurgood Marshall.
Marshall. I can't leave out Thurgood. Yeah, definitely. And an influential actor and his work, super powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think that, you know, why I wanted to bring this up is because a lot of people may not fully understand or grasp what's the why it was such a big deal,
mm-hmm.
why people were so sad about, you know, it's just an actor, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a guy that played a superhero movie. You know, can you explain, because I know,
mm-hmm.
why was seeing Chadwick Boseman play a Black superhero so important? Why did that matter so much?
It lit us up. And, it, you know, and it's one of those things where not only was it just him playing a Black superhero, but also playing the Black superhero, you know, and a superhero we had wanted to have its moment for such a long time because of everything that is represented. And that was important. Like it was such a huge undertaking to take, and he did it with such grace, such class, he just really, really, really brought that role to life.
Yeah, but brought royalty and dignity to
it. And was just, you know, and just did it so well that when you take on something like that and you do it like that, the artistry shines through. And I think we take that for granted, that level of artistic impact, we take it for granted when it comes to acting.
Yeah.
But it's an art form.
Yeah.
And that representation, like, we showed out.
Yeah, man. $1 billion movie.
Like, showed out, yeah. And showed up And, you know, there was so much love and so much reverence for just being able to have that moment. And it was intergenerational.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the other things about it. You know, a lot of people bring up Wesley and Blade, but there wasn't the intergenerational room there.
Right.
With Black Panther, you know, those of us who are older, just because of the life of the comic, could have a moment with our older folks.
Right.
And our nephews, our nieces, our cousins, our kids.
Right.
We could have it with our significant other.
Yep.
You know, it wasn't like you didn't have to be a comic nerd.
Right.
You know, you didn't have to be deep in to recognize the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something in the movie for everyone.
Yeah. That it was a Black male strong lead that didn't need to be saved, that wasn't the sidekick, that wasn't the subservient, who's actually a solid Avenger.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like to me, top three Avengers, and he ain't number three.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to show the value, the royalty, the dignity of, like, even though it's imaginary, Wakanda, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's still like the best of us. It's mm-hmm. it's like a reflection of the best of us, or mm-hmm. what we all would aspire and hope to see in a Black Superman.
Yeah.
Right? That we never saw. You know, I love Christopher Reeves. I grew up watching all those movies. You know what I mean? And being like, can I be that? Because I don't see that, you know, reflection mm-hmm. of me. I see Christopher Reeves. So do Black boys get to be Superman?
Right.
Right? Do we get to win an end? Mm-hmm. Do we get to slay the dragon without having to have the help or the permission?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to see Chadwick carry that out. And I mentioned this to you off camera, all the iconic roles he played. But my son's 9 years old and he is now, you know, and I'm 43. He is seeing a Black superhero and a Black president. And he's only nine,
mm-hmm.
and I'm in my 40s, and I just saw both of those things in the last, you know, decade, right? So the realm of possibility for these young kids seeing, it's a superhero, it's make-believe, you call it what you want, but is what inspires, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Did Rocky inspire people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's certain movies and certain things that go beyond, it's a comic book. It's young Black kids and people and seeing something in themselves that's inspiring, and that non-people of color can look at a Black person as a hero.
Yeah.
That a white kid can dress up like Black Panther for Halloween.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah. That part right there is so major because you get that, and on our terms, like it's not backlash over a character being reimagined as possibly being Black.
Right.
No, it's like this has always been ours, and here, like, joining this moment and celebrate it with us. But not only that, man, it's also the way he embodied this role that got to do so much in the role that we could also find ourselves in. You know, the relationship with his mother, the love interest, but like the respect for her role, like her role didn't diminish,
right?
You know, and her importance, and for her to challenge him and to him to hear it, for him to be faced with Killmonger, but actually to be like,
have to come to terms
with it mm-hmm. and then that moment with his father about like, I'm not going to carry on your decision making, to be surrounded by powerful women that get to have their place even in their particular role, like there's just so much that got played out. Yeah. And that we could find ourselves in. And he was at the center of that.
Yeah,
and then even the press runs they would do with them, just the love, like all those warm moments of them hearing about the impact of the movie and them holding each other together and supporting each other and just seeing them as actors. And like him being a part of and at the heart of that energy,
right.
Like also resonates with us as well, because we watched it all, like anything Black Panther, the press runs, the interviews, we watched it all,
right.
And we just fell in love with them, mm-hmm. especially him for what he was able to give us.
Yeah, definitely super profound, and you know, RIP once again to Chadwick Boseman, and you know, when we talk about allies in the struggle and mm-hmm. we talk about, you know, people trying to figure out what their role or what their voice is. I mean, look at Stan Lee, right? Mm-hmm. To create a character in his universe that is going to be unapologetically black to the point where me and my boy debated, because we knew they were going to make this Avengers movie, and they said they're going to have to tell the Black Panther story. There's no way they can do the Avengers movie and not do a Black Panther movie. And we were debating, like, are they going to do it? They're going to skip it. They're going to leave him out. We really thought they were going to try to figure out a way to leave Black Panther's story out of the Marvel universe because mm-hmm. they just didn't want to tell that story. So it blew us away. You know, we were so super happy, but like at the same time, like, wow. But Stan Lee insisted, right? Mm-hmm. Stan Lee was like, this character was written to be this way. This character in the universe and was put in my universe to be this way, to make this statement. So RIP to Stan Lee as well. I'm talking about allies in the struggle, y'all. You know, JFK, Dean Smith, Stan Lee, people that understand their privilege and even if it's a pinch of the platform, just to shed light on a reality different than what people might carry as their own. Amen to that. And also shout out Ryan Coogler. If y'all don't know, a brother directed that Batman movie. Also did Fruitvale Station. I was really looking forward to seeing Chadwick and Michael B. Jordan go back and forth. Their chemistry, it's like two alphas, and I was really looking forward to seeing that carry out. But you know, he'll forever be the Black Panther, and that's documented. And what we know now is that he was sick the entire time,
right?
Which makes it even more profound.
Yeah.
Definitely RIP Chadwick Boseman. And I also want to touch on, you know, John Thompson. Mm-hmm. For those that are familiar with the legendary coach John Thompson, won a national championship, first African American coach to win a Division I college basketball championship with them Hoyas. I'm originally from DMV area. You know, came up in Dale City, born in Fort Belvoir. So I'm in DC. Grew up in the DC area, and so Georgetown was the deal. Mm-hmm. It was. You know, even though it's a Catholic school and an affluent Catholic school at that, when John Thompson came and started coaching the Hoyas, that became Black America's team. And you wore Hoyas gear to be cool. You wore John, you know, you were that Hoya mystique that, you know, UNLV and the Fab Five carried. I feel like, you know, a lot of that started with the Hoyas, that we're the bad boys, that we're the brothers, we're the ones that counted out, the ones that didn't get scholarships, and now we're on this team to handle a business. And so, you know, I just want to send a RIP out and send much love to him. And I grew up on Big East basketball before I became familiar with the ACC. And so I grew up watching the Syracuse, Georgetown, St. John's, you know, those games back in the day. And so do you have any memories at all, anything John Thompson memories?
Yeah. It was, you said it so well. You know, growing up down here, ACC basketball, you know, it's just, you know, you live and breathe it. Yeah. But when you look outside of that, the next conference was the Big East. And just because, you know, for so many years, it was presented as having a contrasting style to the ACC and being a little bit more rugged and bruiser. And just so to look in the midst of that when it was kind of framed that way and see a Black man walking a sideline coaching and thriving,
cussing out refs
and thriving in that moment with that towel over his shoulder.
Yeah, he looked mean.
Yeah. You know, and so when you think about playing the game and loving the game and watching the game, you know, it just looked like, whether you knew what one was, that just looked like Pops walking that sideline.
Right on.
You know, it looked like, you know, that mentor, that coach, that teacher, like that person. And then you see some of the players, I think, you know, having Patrick Ewing there was one thing, but when everybody watched, you know, we always remember AI, but that team and AI's backcourt mate were just cats from around the way, man. And just the interaction he had with them, you were just like, that's you know what I'm saying? That's Pops, that's Unc, that's just who he felt like.
Yeah.
And like a lot of us just didn't have that kind of person.
Right.
You know, I think that's what the big thing about all this is, representation. And in addition to having success, the representation was so powerful, man.
That's right. And willing to stand up to whoever about whatever. And I think blazed a trail that you see Nolan Richardson and Coach Chaney at Temple and, you know, some of the other African-American coaches that came after him. John Thompson paved the way, you know, and, you know, RIP to him, Big John Thompson, 97% graduation rate amongst his students while he was a coach at Georgetown. Had a national championship, four players, let me not mistake it, Patrick Ewan, Alonzo Mourning, Dikembe Mutombo, and Allen Iverson in the Hall of Fame. So, and him and Dean Smith were very close, you know, off court, apparently, you know, because they were both in this struggle together. And so, yeah, what more can I say? Yeah. One most classic college basketball games of all time, Georgetown, UNC. So, RIP to Chadwick Boseman, RIP to John Thompson, and, yeah, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back here on Inside Voices, speaking with Dasan Ahanu right here on 97.9 The Hill.
You're listening to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas on 97.9 The Hill. We'll be back with more after this. And now, back to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas. Once again, here's Kevin.
And welcome back to Inside Voices. Your host, Kevin Kazi Thomas, and you're listening on 97.9 The Hill, chapelboro.com. And yeah, we're here with Dasan Ahanu, Dasan Ahanu, continuing our conversation about Black Lives Matter, Chadwick Boseman, and the late John Thompson. And yeah, we spoke about a lot of, you know, like, where are we now? You know, we talked about earlier about, I wish that there were no reason or need to have the show, man, you know, in a sense of what the, you know, motivation behind these conversations are. People, you know, Black men and women dying, people of color dying at the hands of police, law enforcement, unarmed, on camera. And yeah, since we, like I said, we talked before, multiple people have continued to, you know, this has continued to be a thing. And so from the time we talked the first time to now, you know, what would we like to see happen? Like, how do we not... How do we get off this treadmill, you know, because I would love to say that there's this huge amount of progress that's happened since our George Floyd conversation, but how do we mentally and, like, you know, what do we do to continue to keep this going? We're still where we are right now.
I think, you know, for me, it's just, it's two main things. One is to protect ourselves, to be mindful of ourselves, self-care, and just take care, good care of ourselves. So that we can sustain ourselves and continue to keep working. And then the other thing is time to strategize and train. I think, you know, for me, equipping ourselves and those around us with skills. It's time for those of us who have skills to make sure we pass those skills around. Those of us who have a good sense and can kind of, you know, even like this show, like for us to continue to have a conversation that cuts through the noise, so that folks can think about how they want to move in a healthy way. But let's train folks up. Let's pass these skills around. Let's kind of garner some of these resources and equip folks for this long struggle, because we in it now.
Right on. And we got a vote coming up, y'all, which we've talked about on our show before. But I must reiterate to you, vote early, whether that's a mail-in. I would show up early at the poll because I don't know what's going on at the post office right now. But I just want to remind y'all that that this election coming up, wherever you're going to vote for, that's your business. But get out there and make sure your voice is heard. Because that is the most important thing that we have coming up in the next 40, 50 days. So I just want to remind y'all out there to make sure that you inform yourself about what we got going on the ballot so we can make a difference in that regard for sure. And yeah, and just continuing to enlighten ourselves, right? And having these conversations. And I know some people are getting burned out on it. Some people want to tune it out, like, you know, like, okay, well, you know, this was all of this over one person's death, and it's just a way bigger conversation. If you think that it was just about one person, then you need to continue to listen to this show and continue to inform yourself with sources outside of the friends and people that you talk to and the news sources that you get. Because this isn't a political issue. This is a life issue. A way of life issue. This is a life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness issue, and I would hate, I wish I didn't have to say that there's going to be another hashtag that we'll speak on in the next 2 or 3 weeks. But unfortunately, that's the reality of what we've been experiencing in America, and it's why we have to have this show.
Yep.
So with that said, we're going to keep our heads up high and continue the good fight, the good trouble that we're on this show on Inside Voices. And thank you, Dasan, once again.
My pleasure.
For being here. And once again, let everybody know where they can get in touch with you and on social media and stuff.
Yeah, you can find me, Dasan Ahanu, DasanAhanu, on any social media and at DasanAhanu.com.
Right on, right on. And just like always, if y'all want to hit us up, you can hit us up on InsideVoices@WCHL.com. And my IG is Kazi 4 letters. I haven't told y'all that before. KAZE, the number 4, LETTERS. If y'all want to hit me up, feel free to reach out. And we'll be back next Sunday, every Sunday, 2:30, Inside Voices, right here on 97.9 The Hill and ChapelBurrow.com. Thanks for listening. It's your host, Kevin Kazi Thomas. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas on 97.9 The Hill. Catch this episode and more by visiting our on-demand page at chapelburrow.com. What you mean?